take a time machine back to before the world went to hell, around the year 2000.
The 80s and 90s were so rad. The movies, the music, the TV, the games, that's what I want to talk about.
Like and subscribe on your favorite podcast app and continue the conversation on Facebook and Instagram. And if you're cool enough, join the show on Patreon for exclusive bonus content. And now, Less Than 2000 with Adam Wintz and Chad Bischoff.
Less Than 2000,
now part of the
HyperX
Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, punch your balls off and please welcome 9-inch
like to be excited about things? Do you remember what it's like to be a young lad and looking forward to things and excited about life and art and discovering who you are and
yes,
and why things are the way they are? You remember what that feeling is like?
I've rediscovered it this week.
Yes. I've largely rediscovered it this week by studying our topic, Woodstock 94. Woodstock 94 was so important to me as a kid, and it still is now because it's the perfect time capsule of that late generation X, early millennial, you know, exennial generation shift. I was so excited in 94 for this concert, and every time I go down this rabbit hole, I just get obsessed with it. I remember what it felt like to be 13 years old and excited about this thing, anticipating it. All these great bands getting together, the 25th year anniversary of the original Woodstock. And when I go back and watch it or listen to it, I get that spark again. I get that feeling of what it was like to be in the summer of 1994 anticipating and following this thing like it was the most important thing in my life.
I mean, MTV literally covered it like bigger than a sporting event. I mean,
yes,
there were the equivalent of the sideline reporters with the
yes.
band doing the couch interviews. You know, you've got the main hosts, you know, up in the booth, you know, that were like perched up high over the vast sea of hundreds of thousands of people, you know, commenting yes. on who's next. I mean, it was literally ran like a massive event.
And it was a massive event. There was, I was wondering, like, they're so weird about their estimate of people. I don't know if the estimates of people were different back in the early 90s, but they're like, 250 to 550,000 people. So, well, how could there be a 300,000 person spread there in the estimate?
Well, it's very simple. The people tore down the fences.
Yes.
People were coming
yeah.
and going. Like, some people were, like, upset that they spent the $140 on a ticket because they just
right.
walked right on in.
They just walked right on in. And the security at the place was, they decided at a certain point, you know, you weren't supposed to bring drugs or alcohol or outside food in or anything like that. But it got so big that by the middle of the second day, which was Saturday, they were just like, we have to focus our efforts on actually making sure people are safe rather than trying to keep stuff out. And unlike Woodstock 99, which I'm only going to mention once because that's terrible and it ruined everything for everybody, screw Woodstock 99 and all you people that caused problems at it. Woodstock 94, there were really no problems. There was no rioting. There was no sexual assault. There was no massive problems. There's no open fires going. It was just three more days of peace, love, and music. That was the tagline.
So 69 ends up you know, really just, I mean, it brought a whole generation of people together, peace, love, at a time that the world really needed it. Then you have the 25th anniversary, got 94. You said nothing happened. The worst thing that happened was really, you know, a lot of rain and a lot of mud. Mm-hmm. And then 99 comes along and everybody screws it up. I don't get it. I really don't understand the philosophy of people that are going to something like that. And it's supposed to be something that unifies people together. And instead, it's divisive.
Woodstock 99 ruined everything. And but thankfully, today's topic is about 94. And 94 was freaking awesome. I mean, people, the big controversy about it was, oh, it's so corporate. It's so, it's all capitalist and it's all just overpriced and sanitized marketing.
Well, I don't think so. That point. Well, I'm on the fence. Now, I watched a lot of stuff last night.
Yeah.
You know, I was up all night. Isn't
it? Yeah.
It was incredible. However, I do kind of understand it because there wasn't, like, every single time I felt like they would cut back to the booth, there'd either be a ticker at the bottom or the guy saying, you know, everyone at home that can't make it here, you know, go ahead and call that cable company. Go ahead and register to pay that $149, you know, so you can be a part of this from home. Don't get me wrong, it's genius, and you bought into it. I believe you told me that you watched the whole thing, right? So it worked, but it was very polished.
It was very polished.
That's what I mean. It was like the equivalent of a very polished sporting event.
It's definitely more polished and corporate than 69 was. But compared to how things are now, it was just kind of like, yeah, of course people were making money. Of course they sold Pepsi. Of course, you know, originally when they started, you could only use Woodstock bucks to buy things. You had to use their special currency. And yeah, it was $140 per ticket, which was like the equivalent of almost $400 today. And so yes, it was very sanitized and corporate, but there were enough positive things about it that it far outweighed any sort of negative. Yeah, of course, corporations are going to make money.
I 100% agree.
They let people in for free after a certain point. And they're just like, you know what? We're not going to bust people for weed anymore. Just let them have fun. And it was fine.
I was trying to think about this because technology had come so far since Woodstock 69. I was sitting there, I was really trying to wonder, like, is it in hindsight very corporate and all that kind of stuff? Or were they just doing what really worked for the times? I mean, they had the ability to stream this into households all over the place and do cable. So why wouldn't you let more people participate in something so epic? So I think by the end of it, I agree with you that I think it was just a really great event. And they did what they should have done.
It's a great event with, I mean, the acts are incredible. Blues Traveler, Live, Sheryl Crow, Collective Soul, Violent Femmes, Aphex Twin, D-Light, Joe Cocker, Blind Melon, Cypress Hill, Rollins Band, Melissa Etheridge, Crosby, Stills, Nash, Nine Inch Nails, Metallica, Aerosmith, Primus, Salt-N-Pepa, Arrested Development, Allman Brothers, Traffic, Spin Doctors, Porno for Pyros, Bob Dylan, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Green Day, Peter Gabriel. This is an amazing lineup of old and new. It gave you the old stuff. There were people from that actually performed in 69. Then there were people that were kind of going out of fad. And then there were people, the new generation was taking over. And God, what a lineup. What an incredible lineup. I get excited about stuff. I remember what it was like to be a 13-year-old boy and excited for all of this stuff. And I so wanted to go. I wanted to be there more than anything. And I kind of feel like, yeah, I didn't get to go, but I got to go back and relive it through the MTV VJs. You mentioned the sports like coverage. I love that stuff. Bill Bellamy up in the like the perch doing the MC and tossing it to people. Tabitha Soren, yep. I loved her, the redheaded girl, the news MTV news lady. Like she was great. I didn't appreciate her as much as a kid. I think looking back, she's awesome now. Chris Connolly and Juliet. I don't remember her last name, but that Juliet girl, the British girl, amazing. And then, guys, I've got something to confess. I carry a torch for Kennedy. I carried a torch for her back then, and I do now. The girl with the glasses, the sort of Daria, Lisa Loeb kind of girl with the alternative edge. Oh, man, Kennedy. And she introduced Nine Inch Nails and everything, and I just... Man, this took me back to a great time.
Was she the one with the dark hair that was doing that like literally harassing people in the middle of
waking
the night?
Waking people up the first night?
Yeah, yes. Waking, just going into their tents and like tapping her microphone on people's faces while sleeping. Yes. And
what are you sleeping for? You're at Woodstock.
Yeah, literally. And then drags as many people as possible to an all-night rave until sunup. And then it's like, all right, the party continues.
Yeah, dude. Ravestock, they called it. Ravestock that had Aphex Twin and D-Light and the Orb. I mean, that was amazing that the first night that they had a rave. And I was thinking about, I wrote down some things that were like, this was a bunch of new stuff or a bunch of stuff that we as middle Americans... you know, in the center of the world, not in a hip place like L.A. or New York or Miami or whatever. Things that were new to me or things that were becoming popular at the time, like raves. I don't know if I'd ever heard of a rave before. Moshing was still kind of a new thing. Moshing, they're like, oh my God, it's, you know, you're moshing or whatever. In fact, Joe Cocker, who of course was in the 1969 Woodstock, he referred to it as mushing. Oh yes, all those people out there were mushing. They're like, no, it's moshing, but that's all right. You're like 70.
It was so new at the time that literally they didn't even know how to say it right. I mean, everybody mushing. Was so awkward about it. You know, he's calling it mushing, you know, and they're like, yeah. I mean, you know, It was funny. That's how new it was. Like, that was a new concept of, like, pushing each other and, you know, in the front of the
headbanging was still kind of a new thing.
Yeah.
Body paint was kind of a new thing. People walking around with body paint. And so it was awesome to just see that. That's all stuff that is ubiquitous. We know about it. It's like, oh, yeah, that was probably the first time I heard of a rave. Or really saw moshing on that level and headbanging and body paint and cool stuff like that. It's awesome. Right?
No, there is a scene in the documentary, which, by the way, if anybody has no concept of what we're talking about, YouTube has tons of amazing stuff. And there is like a whole 2.5-hour documentary with a lot of the highlights and everything. But there's a scene where she's body painting like Woodstock on a guy's chest, the woman is.
Yes, yes.
And the VJ from MTV was so cringe, man. He's sitting there like, so what are you doing?
Yeah.
Man, do you like body painting, man? And like, it was so weird. And then turns to the woman next to her. And she like opens her shirt and shows her body paint. And he's like, I mean, it was so cringe. That was the worst part of the whole thing. It was like, dude, come on. Chill out. Do you like doing that?
Did you know that you can change what you taste by what you hear? How can you use sound to make a deeper connection with your clients? Can we be healed with sound? Sound influences people in their buying decisions and their daily lives. In the podcast Audio Branding, I explore all of this, both with my own observations as a voice actor of over 15 years and by interviewing knowledgeable professionals in the field of advertising, marketing, music, and science. To have a listen for yourself, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com.
Another thing that was, that was new, and this is what's amazing for the time capsule portion of this, is the singer for Blind Melon wore yes. a dress, and it was a major controversy. Or it wasn't so much a controversy, but it was like a, this is something that isn't commonplace. This was before Dennis Rodman did it. This was, so to see a man wear a dress and perform was like, what are you doing? Whose dress is that? Why are you dressed like that? What is, and those questions are fair. But at the time, if you saw a rock singer wearing a dress now, you really wouldn't think twice about it. You're like, that's his artistic choice. Like, but at the time, it's like, who is this guy? Is he on drugs? Which he was. He was tripping on LSD the whole show. And the performance suffered for it. But yeah, a man wearing a dress in 94 was a huge thing.
And it wasn't just the, I mean, he had a blue barrette or whatever in his hair. It wasn't just the dress. The dress is what everybody saw. When you see him up close, you're like, there's a lot more going on in that outfit that was supposedly his girlfriend's at the time. It was his girlfriend's dress. And
I love that.
I wish I would have watched this with you. I wish I would have watched it with you back in 94. And honestly, now that we're separated by many, thousands of miles, I actually wish we would have watched it together today. I mean, this is one of those things that is such a time capsule of our generation, of the stuff we were growing up with. Watching that with someone else like you and being able to like talk about the music, talk about the bands, talk about the controversies, talk about, everyone flinging mud on stage during Green Day. Right. And then and then one of the guitarists laid on the ground and the security mistakes him for like a fan and body tackles him and knocks his tooth out. Like, I mean, there was like, these are the things that we could have relived together. And I'm so glad you helped tee this up and send me all this stuff to watch. But imagine going through that with someone else, because it was amazing.
The Hardcore Gaming 101 podcast is on a mission to rank the top games of all time.
I like the idea that when Bruce Wayne gets angry, he switches to the Batman voice.
Why do you have such a problem making boomerang shaped like a bat?
You mean jerk. Like Batman?
Not like Batman! Just make it for me, Bruce Wayne! I can't even with this guy!
It's a Herculean task, and I'd be lying if I said it hasn't taken a toll on our cognitive faculties.
Most people would be happy to have a job during a global pandemic. Dennis!
Hardcore Gaming 101, twice a week, every week, right here on the HyperX Podcast Network.
SequelCast 2 and Friends looks at movies and video games and franchises, one movie and game at a time. Hosted by Matt Bradley Shurgi, Thrasher, and Alex Miller, been going since 2009, and we're part of the HyperX Podcast Network.
I was pretty shocked that Nine Inch Nails was such a major piece of Woodstock. Because you look at that, you look at the list of bands and you're like, I mean, Nine Inch Nails is an electronic. I mean, they're like a new type of band. I mean, it was so unique. And this was right after Broken and Fixed. So they were, and Downward Spiral, right, had just come out as well, right?
Just come out. Yep.
So there was still a lot of anger in the music. It was a lot heavier,
And
Prince all that.
Prince of Darkness.
And I mean, Trent was pissed about that show. Like, hated it. They had a mud fight beforehand, and then the sound wasn't working. There was a part of me looking back on it, like, kind of uncool, man. Like, he literally started, like, breaking his stuff on stage, mad that it wasn't working. And, I mean, I guess there's kind of that's so rock and roll, man.
It's rock
and
roll.
But then he's also like, he's mad. Had I not known he was mad, then he thought the show sucked and just literally in interviews came out and was like, we were awful. Like, had I not known that, I wouldn't have thought, he's actually doing it. But he just lost his cool up there.
He didn't want to play the show ahead of time. He didn't like the way it turned out afterward, but he has come since to realize that was an amazing show. And I'm willing to say, without question, that was the most important show in the history of Nine Inch Nails. Because it
Agreed.
Just rocketed them into a new level of exposure. And you mentioned surprised about them being that big of a deal. They weren't supposed to be that big of a deal. They weren't a big thing coming into this, but they stole the show. They were at the right place at the right time. They had the right energy. And imagine this. They went on Saturday night before Metallica and before Red Hot Chili Peppers, which were way bigger acts at the time. But yep. The biggest crowd was at Nine Inch Nails. The crowd was at its peak capacity, was at Nine Inch Nails. And they did such an amazing show, and that anger and just the performance, and even though the music wasn't that great, it stole the show, and you couldn't follow that. Metallica looked like people left. They didn't stick around to watch Metallica or Red Hot Chili Peppers because nothing could follow Nine Inch Nails on that night.
That is insane. I did go back and watch. You had sent me the Metallica one. I was always a big fan of Metallica.
Yeah.
I love instrumental music. So some of their early stuff was great. Obviously, you know, the self-titled Black Album is, you know, what they're most known for, probably.
Yep.
But you're right. Having watched some Nine Inch Nails and then watching Metallica, I'm like, yeah, Trent killed it. I mean, like, it is no wonder. I mean, it was just different. You know what I mean? Like, Nine Inch Nails had only been around for like 6 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
recently got popular.
Exactly.
And Metallica was one of, if not the biggest bands on this ticket. And that's why they were basically headlining the biggest night, which is Saturday night. But, you know, and they had been out for 10 years. They had done all this stuff in the 80s, Ride the Lightning, Injustice for All, Master of Puppets, and then the Black Album was a mega hit for them. Enter Sandman and all that stuff came out in 91. Well, there was this is what I'm talking about, the shift. Not to talk crap about Metallica because they're great, but they were like, you could see a major difference. They were like old hat compared to this raw energy of Nine Inch Nails and this new thing that most people were experiencing for the first time. And they're covered in mud. They're screaming. It sounds like a show. I just swore for the first time in this half a season, not directly quoting something. And then you get Metallica, who seems a little bit too polished after that and a little bit too corporate.
And 100%.
And they're the machine. They had been touring for so long and that all their music sounded polished and perfect. And they had done that show so many times. It just didn't seem as authentic and edgy, nearly as edgy as what had immediately been on stage before them.
Well, not when you have Trent covered in mud with his hair in his face screaming, you know, the lyrics of happiness and slavery. I mean, like, yeah, it's going to feel different. Yeah, it's raw because it is raw.
Think about this, Chad. We are now further away from Woodstock 94, 28 years, than we were from the original Woodstock when Woodstock 94 happened. And think about how 60s that was, you know, with Joe Cocker and Grateful Dead and Santana. Right. And then 94 was like a completely different thing. Do you think culture has changed more from 69 to 94 or from 94 to 2021, let's say, or 2019 would have been 25 years?
It's hard to picture that because the 60s, there was so much social issues going on in the world that you needed something like Woodstock 69. You needed people to come together for peace, love, and all that kind of stuff and music. By 94, we had been, the music had changed, the styles had changed, but things were starting to become easier. We were born at a time where things were, I mean, I think a little bit more peaceful to a degree. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were still wars, there was things like that. But in this country, I think it was a really great time. And technology was actually at that point bringing us together to the point to where, you know, I almost kind of wondered, was this Woodstock 94? They were still talking about the peace and love aspect of it. But I felt like MTV was really trying to sell that concept because, you know, it, they were kind of mimicking the 69 Woodstock, but really it was just a bunch of dope bands. And they're like, peace and love. Well, what for? We already are peace and love. We were at a good time. You know, I would say to a degree, we've regressed in some areas today. You know, so I almost feel like if we were to do a Woodstock today, bringing people together is would be more important today that would match the 69. I think 94 was a sweet time period.
Yeah.
That they were just kind of spoon-feeding that the notion of that.
Think about how corporate and inauthentic it would be now. Compared, I mean, if we think 94 was corporate and polished, think about how corporate and polished it would be now. And how they would go out of their way to be representative. I'll grab this type of band, this type of band. And that's probably a good thing. But to your point, Woodstock 94 was more like just an amazing set, an amazing collection of bands. You're right. MTV treated this like it was a sequel. They treated it as, and it was, but they treated it as it was kind of on the very much the coattails of 69. And two more days of peace, love, and music. Three more days of peace, love, and music. And the hippie flower power stuff. And everything was playing off the original. Whereas, with the benefit of 28 years behind us, Woodstock 94 was very much its own thing.
Correct.
And it can stand on its own and was awesome in its own right. And didn't need to ride on the coattails of 69.
No, it didn't. Because I feel like they had two separate purposes.
When you think of 69 to 94, we had gone through, you know, the classic rock phase. We went through the punk rock phase. We went through new wave. We went through 80s pop. We went through 80s hair bands. We went through grunge. We went through disco. We went through all of those permutations of music and culture in 25 years. And from 94 to 2019, we had, we had some racial stuff going on in the early 90s. The Rodney King riots had just happened.
Yep.
And the OJ thing was fresh. But I don't know. I'd say there was more change between 69 and 94 than there has been in the last almost 30 years. There hasn't been nearly as many changes in music.
In music development.
Although I wouldn't know because I only paid attention for about six of those years. And I couldn't tell you what's happened to the other 22.